Welcome to the show about your company of one.
Hello, I'm Dale Callahan. I'm the author of Resumes Are Worthless, the definitive resource to becoming a company of one. And I am your guide through your journey. Welcome to the show. Hello, this is Dale Callahan, and we are welcoming you to the Company of One. Today, I kind of want to hit a topic. We want to hit a topic of disruptive innovation. And that term may not mean anything to you, but I want to talk through the issue that we get a lot of questions on. Innovation. How does innovation impact you and your career? Have you ever thought about that as you look toward what's going on in the world and our job and what's happening? You know, how does innovation impact your career, and what specific steps can you take to be ahead of it? I mean, so many people get caught up in innovation, but are there some things that you can do to understand what's happening, where the opportunities are? Are you in a dying industry? Are you in a dying job that no longer has opportunity? Or are you moving toward the area where all the opportunity is? You know, oftentimes we find this stuff out too late. We find ourselves in an area that we're experts in, but it's too late to get out of it. And I think about friends in the mainframe industry, and mainframes, you know, are largely a dying industry, most people would say. And you could argue that, but right now that's the thought. This is a dying industry. But if you're there at this point, it's a pretty stiff transition to get out. You should have maybe seen it coming sooner, if you will. But there's clearly other opportunities there. So we're going to talk about that here in a moment. But first of all, I want to just offer you one of the things I'm doing. I'm going to tell a little bit about where my heart is and where I've been trying to drive and to help people. One of the things that I spend a great amount of time doing is counseling, coaching, meeting with people that are trying to find career opportunities, trying to start businesses, trying to grow their businesses, trying to increase their market space, trying to make better positions within the company they work for. You know, in other words, and I've really been struggling with, you know, what does all that look like? What is that expertise that people have sought me for? If you've gone through the Company of One stuff and how to find your calling, what is that expertise? And that's part of what this show is about. Part of what we're doing here is to nail down that issue. And it is taking responsibility, owning it, owning your income stream. I don't really like the word career. I mean, we use it. I really hate the word job, but at least the context we use it in today. Job means, you know, if I'm a lawn care guy and I go mow somebody's lawn, that's a particular job. If you put some paperwork on my desk to process, that's a job. A job is a specific task, and we've kind of taken it to mean something different in our society. But I'm trying to help people take that, you know, and look at opportunities and take control of their income. One of the things that we're going to do, and I'm going to start this in April, so depending on when you're listening to this, it will be in April the 2003, the first Wednesday night, and this is actually a in-person conference that we'll be doing, or a training seminar. We will be doing over 5 nights, and I will put a link to this in the show notes, but it's a conference that we'll be doing at Briarwood Church in Birmingham, Alabama, that we'll be doing in conjunction with the Mercy Ministry there. And the goal will be to kind of to awaken that entrepreneur in you, to help you either try to find a path of where your income is going to come from, or for many of us, it's just creating that extra stream of income to do something, to identify what it is. This is not a training seminar that just listening to people talk. This should be active. What our goal is, we have a 100% return on investment. It's about a $98 fee to pay for the materials. By the end of this, we expect everyone to have customers to have made well over $98 in return for what they've got. I'm a big fan of return on investment. You know, when I spend money at a conference, when I spend money on a book, when I spend money on anything, I expect to get my money back tenfold. I want them to expect that of me too, that I'm going to help them do that. So that's what we're going to be doing. We hope, and we'll put, again, we'll put the show notes, and anyone interested in looking at the show notes, feel free to contact me via email or via Twitter or something if you're interested in that. What we're going to do with that, we're going to record it. We're going to put this up, and we're going to offer this as a package for sale and, you know, ongoing for people. And the basic premise of what we're doing there is we're helping you to identify who, what it is that you can do. What specific businesses should you start? And maybe I'm using plural intentionally because for many people it may be more than one. What, how to identify who your customers are? How do you find out where their customers are? How do you reach them? How do you find out who's influencing your customers already? How do you make connections there? What kind of things do you need to do legally and IRS-wise to not get in trouble as you start a new business and as you move into something? How do you protect yourself from some of those obvious things that are going on? And then that's where we want to focus our time and energy this time. But the goal is that by the end of the five-week session that you will have identified these things, that you will have identified products and services to offer, and you will be offering them. Now, this should apply to anybody, but I'm telling you, the magic space that I'll say is more information products. If you're having to build a large product or something, obviously we are addressing that. If you're doing a venture capital deal, you know, we're going to talk to, you know, how do you start things, how do you raise money. But, you know, if you've listened to any of this, I'm not a big fan of that. But that's where we're going to be. That's where we're going to look at. And so I'll look forward to hearing from you if that's something you're interested in, if you're in the Birmingham area. If that's just something you're interested in learning, whether you're in this area or not, let me know. Let me know, because I would love to hear what kind of problems and challenges you have as we're trying to help. Now, with that said, let me kind of dive into the giant subject. I am doing a talk at to a group on disruptive innovation in a couple of days. Well, actually, it will be after you've heard this that we've done this. But as I was planning on that, I thought, you know, this would be great show material because innovation obviously impacts us all. So what I want to look at is, you know, how will innovation impact your career and your income? Some observations about that. What causes innovation? Where does it come from? Five particular steps that we can take, I mean us as individuals, to take to be ahead of the innovation, to see where it's going. Five particular steps. And then maybe I'm going to look at some specific predictions of what I think are going to happen here. I find people, when they look at innovations, they have a small view of things. So let me kind of start off here and say, you know, how will innovation impact your career and your income? And let me just go back to that small view of things. When I talk to people about innovations, they will say things like, yeah, you know, when that Microsoft is coming out with a new version, or Windows is coming, I mean, Apple's coming out with a new version of software. They will talk toward new products and services their companies are buying or looking at buying. And it's really where we did a conference call the other day on innovation with a group of people, and all the examples were in the past. I mean, it's just like everything else. We understand what happened in the past very, very well. But we're very poor as a whole, as a society, of looking for what's going on, with the exception of a few people. So what I want to do today is kind of hopefully to help you kind of create a little bit of a radar, or tune that radar in to what's going on. You know, we all love innovation. We love the things that have come about. We love things like iPhones. We love Southwest Airlines, you know, if you like to travel. And we love the modern conveniences. We love the internet. We love the ability to be able to have 40 bazillion television channels. But yet, so often we don't pay attention. And I'm gonna go back to the story that you may have heard before, because we've told this. But my grandfather owned a company which sold typewriters and cash register systems and things, but typewriters being one of them, and he had people that repaired the systems. And you can just imagine if your head's down, you're really busy, you're going to typewriter school 101 repair, you know, and you're in graduate typewriter repair school, typewriter repair. And when you do that, you're so busy and so focused on the newest and latest technologies of the typewriter, you don't pay attention to this little toy called the Apple computer or this little toy coming out by this company called Microsoft. You're totally oblivious of what's going on, or you see it and you consider it a toy, which, by the way, you know, I would say probably at the beginning it was a toy. And so often we see people caught by that. I mean, I met with a guy not too long ago that he was looking for some advice and career stuff, and, you know, great guy, great heart, loved what he did, but he designed boxes. Now, that sounds trivial, but if you think of your manufacturing plant and you're putting out large things that are fragile and you need to box them up to ship them, you know, there's a lot to be considering in the engineering of a container that can partake your products and services and ship them around the world. But that's what he did. And he was telling me, as he was kind of interviewing, he's lost his job because the company has outsourced part of it because there's software and there's tools to do it. And as I sat there and listened to it, and I just was telling him, you know, I think you're in a dead industry because the way things are happening, so much is shipped electronically, first of all. So there's less stuff shipped. There are better engineering processes. There's better companies. There's outsourced companies. There's software to do what you do with a click of a button. You know, why do they need you? Why do they need a guy that's creative? When you've got things coming out, why do they need a guy to pay, to have on the payroll, to pay his health care, to pay all the stuff that goes along with an employee when they have alternatives for doing it? And, you know, he didn't really buy it, and I think he actually landed something, but he's in a temporary role. Let's just face it. It's going away, and maybe he's just trying to ride out, and that was kind of my information, you know, what I got from him. I just want to ride it out. I want to ride out this technology, to ride out what I know until I can retire. It seems like a dumb strategy to me, and I told him that, but, you know, that's where he was. That's where a lot of people are. They're just riding it out. I know a lot of people in the mainframe world, they tell me that. I'm just riding it out. People who are COBOL programmers, you know, I'm just riding it out till the end, you know. I don't think it's a great strategy. How long will the ride be? Who's in charge of when the ride's ended? You know, it's like if you go to Disney World, you don't have any say when the ride's ended. When the ride's ended, you just get off. In this case, when the ride's ended or when it's about to be ended or when there's other alternatives, you're fired. You know, nothing, doesn't matter how excellent you are at what you do. So let me make some observations about innovation. Just to kind of get our head around some stuff, just some high-level observations. Sometimes when we look at innovative products and things that are coming out on the market, and by the way, this is one of the things to help spot it, but this is just an observation right now. It may be hard to explain. If you see somebody struggling to explain something that's a new technology, that's a new twist, and you're like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know why I would need that. It could be that they have a dumb product. And by dumb product, I mean they're selling to a market something the market doesn't need. That's possible. It could be you don't get it. And let me give you a couple of examples of things that you probably didn't get. Or at least, let me say, I didn't understand it the first time I heard it. The iPod. When I first heard, you know, I can get a bunch of music on this little device, and, you know, I was, who cares? Now, I'm not a guy to, you know, carry around music or listen to music constantly. I do now that I have Pandora, but it wasn't something that connected with me. I was like, why? Why do I care? When they started talking about podcasting, by the way, which this will be out in podcast and radio blogs. And I didn't get it. I just did not get it. I didn't understand why you cared about these things. And I remember Steve Jobs talking about it. You know, you can put 1,000 songs in your pocket. Now, I still didn't get that you can put 1,000 songs in your pocket. You know, what does that mean? I had the same problem with the iPhone, as my iPhone's over here going off. I had the same problem with the iPhone. You know, why did I want a camera, an email, a device all in one? That seemed like, I don't know, I didn't make the connection. Why do I want those? I kind of want all that stuff separate. Because Apple envisioned all the data going together, and I didn't. They saw it. So it was hard to explain, which, by the way, if you look at most of, and by the way, the iPad, I'll throw the iPad in there, which I have an iPad, love an iPad. You know, when I first saw it, I'm like, why do I care? Evernote, I'll throw that in there. It's hard to explain. Why do I care? Why do I want this? So as I look at Apple's, most of those things, and Steve Jobs was famous for getting up there and taking 30 minutes or 45 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever, to explain why you need the product. And that's what made it famous. Sometimes disruptive innovation is hard to explain. Twitter is another one. And many of you probably will still say, Twitter, what a waste of time. Facebook, what a waste of time. These are innovations that probably when we first saw them, we're like, what are you going to do with this? Why do we care? The graduate program that we do, because we focus on people as clients, because we're not doing traditional grad. You know, people have a view of what graduate study looks like. So it takes us a lot of explaining about what we do and why we're different and why they care. You know, Southwest Airlines, I think when they first started offering low fare and a limited route, you're like, I want cheaper, but do I really want cheaper? You know, do I really want a cheaper airline experience? Does this mean the aircraft is going to fall out of the sky because it runs out of fuel? Why do I want limited routes? That seems kind of a dumb idea. Cell phones, as my cell phone is going off here. If you think about cell phones, you know, I come from a telecom industry background, and the telecom industry always prided itself in quality. 99.999% reliability. It never ever goes down. You know, and that was a big sell point. And cell phones, they can't deliver that. As you know, we drop calls, you have bad service and things like that. But what we've realized is that it's hard to explain that. And it's, you know, now we look at cell phones and we realize people don't care about the quality. What they care about is the mobility more than the quality. So that, you know, there's one thing that goes on is that your products and your services and disruptive innovation may be hard to explain why we care and why we need it. Oftentimes, another observation here is the smaller companies are usually the better innovators. Now, Apple being an exception, you know, and there are some other exceptions. Usually, it's not the large companies doing it. Usually it is the small companies who are under the radar, who you have never heard of before, that grow, you know, Twitter being one of them, Evernote being something that maybe some of you aren't even familiar with Evernote. But a lot of these things kind of come out of nowhere, or they look like they come out of nowhere. But it's usually the smaller companies, because large companies have a very difficult time innovating. Or they have a different process, and usually that process looks like find innovative small companies in our space and buy them. You know, the third point here, the third observation is innovation is often creeps in as low-cost alternatives. Think about Japanese cars. Now, if you were, I'm guessing the 80s, you know, when we had, you know, the American cars were at a boom, we had big cars, and we started to have some gas price issues. Maybe I'm thinking of 70s. I don't know, but The Japanese started putting out cheap, inexpensive, pretty well-made cars for the most part, but I don't know if the first ones were. They were good, and, you know, they were cheesy cars. If you bought a Japanese car, you were buying a cheesy product. You know, you were cheap. But they creep in as low-cost alternatives. Same thing for Japanese electronics. If you look at the early Japanese electronics, they were kind of knockoffs. They weren't major players in the field. But they improved. They changed process. They grew over time. But they entered the market because, you know, when the Japanese cars entered the market, American car makers didn't care. Hey, we're making great luxury cars that do great things, and these guys are making knockoffs. Who cares about them? Nobody wants them. And the people who do want them, we don't want to sell to them. Well, they gained market share. They gained ground. They gained loyalty. And pow. When I look at tools like Evernote now, when you think about Microsoft Office and what Microsoft Office does, I'm seeing Evernote because, I don't use Microsoft Word, although I'm a fan of Microsoft. Pretty big fan of Microsoft, for that matter. I don't use Office anymore if I can help it. I've dumped Outlook in favor of Mac Mail. But in terms of just writing content, in terms of keeping up with stuff, things I used to open up Word for, I've moved to Evernote. And I'm seeing Evernote creep in little areas that, and by the way, I pay nothing for Evernote at this point. I probably will, but I don't pay anything at this point. But I'm seeing Evernote creep in with various new applications and things they can do and ways to capture data that they're creeping in ever so slowly into Microsoft's market. The third observation is, you know, here's some things that, or the I guess the fourth observation is triggers. What triggers disruptive innovation? And, you know, we all think it's technology. And, yeah, I'd say that's, as a trigger, that's probably a big one, but not necessarily the trigger because we have lots of advanced technology we're not using today. I'm going to throw in there, it could be process, and going back to the Amazon Kindle that I've discussed before. It wasn't the technology, but it was a technology combined with a process that made the Kindle work, that made iTunes work. But oftentimes it's more the crowd, the individuals, us as people that make it work. Also, we have geographical, you know, sometimes the geographical issues like cell phones take off in countries, well, America, the United States, and most large countries have a base of copper in the ground for their telecommunications infrastructure. Many companies didn't have it because it cost. I remember when I worked for Bell South, we were paying taxes on billions of dollars of copper in the ground. Well, that's very expensive undertaking, not to mention the taxes, but just getting it in the ground. So countries that didn't have that, cell phones grew rampant. Smaller companies, again, trying to capture a niche or trigger. You know, Apple kind of did this when you got into the arts and the graphics. They were trying to find out what their niche was. Their graphic processing, some of the things, the artistic side, they captured a niche there with their computers, and it kind of went into the education market, and that niche grew, and they finally got legs under them to where they could take off. But you know, these are just some of my, and I'm telling all this mainly just to let's think about what's going on. These are just some observations that, you know, use of your product may be hard to explain. Smaller companies are usually the innovators. Innovation often creeps in at low-cost alternatives. And then you look at some of the triggers that would come off of some of those things. These are just some things I have observed and the team that I work with that they have observed, and you know, some of the great guys in our graduate program that we're looking at this, some of the observations they're making about disruptive innovation and how it impacts your income. And with that said, let me look at, let's hit the real issue. What steps can you take? What steps can you and I take that we're in the world, we're making money, we're serving other people? You know, it's really important, I think, in especially in the company of one presence that we talk about in the book, Resumes Are Worthless, that one of your responsibilities to yourself, to your own company of one, is to be a great research officer, to keep your head out of the sand to keep your ears tuned and your eyes open and looking for what happens. So we've been exploring with a small team group in our graduate program that are doing some disruptive innovation stuff with me. We're trying to come up with a framework of how do we as individuals, busy jobs, we have lives, how do we not get surprised? How do we stay ahead of it? And it's not a matter of just not being surprised because I'm going to lose my job. But the other thing is, how do I find opportunity in it? You know, when I went, when I used to work for Bell South, and I was in operations, and we served the, we served the customers. It was about 250,000 customers in one of the areas I did that were hooked up over copper lines to the phones and systems at their houses and offices. And that's who we served and controlled and operated and made sure everything worked. I moved out of that into what was called advanced intelligent networking, where we see things like caller ID and some of the more advanced features, which today are not advanced, but it was a step to move into more of the handling data instead of just phone calls. But in the short time I was in advanced intelligent networking, which was probably about 3 years, that went up, went down, and went away. Well, not away, but it went to the backside as we looked at broadband technologies and voice over IP crept in the door. And so while I was on the leading edge one day, and this literally was a 3-year window for me, while I was on the leading edge one day, about 1.5 years into that, the new voice over IP and stuff was there, and it had become not mainstream, but it had become the talk of the town. And now I was in the old foregone technology. I mean, I was now standard. I was now, mature technology, as you would call it. It took 1.5 years, literally. And some of the guys on the team with me, they went and got into voice over IP and some of those other things. I did not. I actually left in the advanced intelligent networking group. But when you look at that, it can come very swiftly, and your company can suddenly, you and your job can suddenly be caught. So I'm gonna give you five things that I do. And I'm just looking at my numbering. Obviously, I can't number. I'm looking, my numbers were 1 through 8, but really it's supposed to be 1 through 5. But five things that I do, five things that we came up with. This is not really about me, but things that I do, and as we discussed it, the team, they helped me categorize this, and they kind of added to this through some reading. And by the way, through some reading of material, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. And this is about a team of 7 of our IAM clients that have really added a lot of legs here to this talk today, to this show. Number one is to look outside of your circle. As one guy put it, to travel around the world a couple of times. Now, for some of you, that doesn't sound enticing, doesn't sound interesting. Some of you think that sounds really cool. Some of you think that sounds really expensive and practical, wherever you are on that. So, to me, that's not something I necessarily have a great desire to just go do. To you, that may sound like a blast. But to look out, how do you look outside your circle? How do you look outside your world? You've got to pay attention whether you're traveling or not. And by the way, many people can travel and not pay attention, so it's still a matter of paying attention. If you're familiar with Jim Rogers, who's an investor, that does a lot of stuff, and he's written a book. I think the name of the book is A Gift for My Daughters, but it's Jim Rogers. He's a venture cap. Well, he's not a venture capitalist, an investor. He writes a lot about China, what's going on in China, what's going on there. Matter of fact, he and his family have moved to Singapore so they can speak Chinese, so they can be in one of the wealthiest countries in the world. He's made some really we might consider bizarre decisions based upon where he thinks the future is. Now, he's not saying China is going to take over the world, but he thinks there's a massive economic engine there. not without its problems. For in one of those problems being water, China has some major major water issues. So we also look at, after looking at it, Jim has some interesting thoughts, and I was at a talk where he did, 6 months or so ago, and his, and matter of fact, I think he says this in A Gift to My Daughters, or The Gift to My Children, however the book's titled. I'll get that and put that in the show notes. Let me write that down. But one of the things he said is, everybody that comes out of MBA schools or graduate schools, they want to go into high finance, they want to get into Wall Street, they want to be in, commodities, where all the large, massive amount of money has been made in the last few years. And there has been massive amounts of money flow there. He said that his comment is that's over. That's over. Now, there's a lot of reasons he said that's over, but he was telling people as he was talking to groups at Oxford and Cambridge that were doing this, that were planning on being in high finance, he told them, you guys ought to quit right now and go into agriculture and mining. Now, if you're a high finance guy and sitting there, that's got to be shocking. You want me to put on overalls and go out in the field and shoot a backup? And if you're in the farming, don't take offense. But that's how people view it, right? His point was that if they look at the average age of the farmer, if you look at the fact that there's not many people going into farming, if you look at the growth of the population, if you look at the way some technologies and money goes, that those aren't – money is no longer a hard-to-find commodity, electronics, information you're getting, but – food, people, we still need food, and that's going to be a harder to find commodity. I'm going to throw in there water because China's suffering with that. Mining, because these are industries that we might consider old and dying industries, and Jim's predicting that, hey, no, these are the new industries, and some people are poised. People where lots of land is cheap, that you have small factories that you can do stuff. So like in areas, especially like in the southeastern United States, that land is fairly cheap, that land is plentiful, that there's already established farms, that these people are going to be extremely – this is going to be the center of industry soon, not New York and Wall Street, but the farms. Now, you can assume Jim's crazy, but that's a prediction. But he gets that from looking outside of his world and is kind of looking out. And, he has a pretty strong track record of being right. I think Jim's one of these guys, when he speaks, you may think he's crazy, but you might want to listen and think about it. So you look outside of where you're at. You look out, you stick your head outside of your office. You stick your head outside of your industry. You stick your head outside of your culture. You stick your head outside of your assumptions of what's a dead industry and what's not, and what's cool and what's not. And you just think about, at the end of the day, what do people have to have? What do people need? What are requirements? What am I going to pay money for? Because that's what we're talking about. Where does money flow? The second thing is paying attention to the toys. So if you look outside your circle, toys. I find toys fascinating. Usually I overlook them, but I find – and I'll give you a case in point. My daughter, I used to tell her, get off that stupid Facebook thing. You need to go off and do something. You're wasting your time. Now, she actually does Facebook for a living now. She's a social media specialist. That was a toy. Computers were a toy. Bill Gates' father is famous for saying – he told Bill Gates the same thing, get off that stupid computer thing and go get a real job and do something. It was a toy. Today we have remote control Wi-Fi helicopters. Matter of fact, if you go to a store like a Brookstones, you see all kind of little gadgetry. Yeah, but what can you do with that? What can you do with remote control vacuum cleaners and remote control helicopters and remote control Wi-Fi stuff? Interesting thoughts there to think about. These are toys. Today we have integrated games with virtual reality. Our children are excellent at gaming and virtual reality and worlds and other worlds, and different contexts of things. How might that play out? Play with the toys, you know, in this. You know, when you pay attention to toys, play attention. You know, and people tell me the gadget geek might actually have an advantage here. Now, I'm not even though I have a background in engineering, I'm not a gadget geek. You know, I kind of find gadgets, you know, I ain't got no time for that. I mean, that's how I view it, to mess with stuff. And I'm becoming a little more experimental on that, you know, playing with some toys. When new apps, like when Evernote sends a new app, I download it. I try it. When Vine, a new video app for social media, comes out, I try it. You know, when I go into stores, I try to play with stuff. And, you know, hang out with the kids. Observe them. What are they doing? What are they thinking about? You know, they may not be thinking about the economy and how things work, but they have creative uses for things. So pay attention to the toys. And related to that, you know, the third thing here is pay attention to the Department of Defense, to large, massively funded government agencies that seem to have no end amount of dollar. You know, there's no connection to return on investment. They can spend ungodly amounts of money. Now, that while it's our tax money, and a lot of that goes to waste, clearly, there are some things that are there. For instance, drones. Pretty prevalent now in the military. What are we going to do with drones? How is that going to impact me and you? Remote monitoring. You know, we now have military officers all over the world, or military staff all over the world, monitoring stuff all over the world. They don't have to be in Afghanistan to know what's going on directly in Afghanistan. I mean, obviously you need foots on the ground, but you don't need you don't have to be everywhere to know everything. We can fly over a place, drop sensors on the ground, and wirelessly control them. So these sensing technologies, and there's an awful lot that goes on in the military that's pretty sophisticated. You know, we can make fun of the military in terms of our sophistication. Obviously, we appreciate what the military does, but we make fun of it in terms of being old school kind of way of doing things. Not so. Very sophisticated technologies are there. Sometimes they don't necessarily use them in ways that we might use them, but pay attention to it. Especially if you take the toys in the Department of Defense or large funded things and where they intersect. That's some cool stuff. The fourth thing here is just reading, being more observant. You know, I like to read some blogs and read over blogs and just pay attention to stuff. There's several books that we have read as part of our class that we're doing on innovation. Let me kind of just throw some out, and these will be in the show notes. Seeing What's Next, Using Theories and Innovation to Predict Industry by Clayton Christensen. And by the way, Clayton Christensen writes a lot on innovation. A lot of his stuff is written from a company point of view, but lots of insight. He has books on education, healthcare, where innovation happens. Reverse Innovation, Create Far From Home, Win Everywhere, another book that was mentioned, and Disruptive Innovation, What Every Business Leader Should Know. And by the way, if you aren't clear on that, you are a business leader. If nothing else, you're leading your own business. So just be reading, being observant, seeing what's going on, paying attention is kind of what this is about. The fifth thing troubles people, but it's schedule time to think. And I say this, and you may laugh at that, but I say this in all seriousness. You know, we don't think in our society. We just plug in 900 miles an hour and do. We follow leaders, whether they're good leaders or not. We follow the Joneses. We plow along. We rarely think through where are we at. You know, that's a big deal in the book Resumes Are Worthless, to think through stuff, to company of one idea. You know, downtime is critical. You know, we homeschool our children, and one of the things that we've noticed is if you turn off everything and just let them have this downtime where they're like, Mom and Dad, I'm bored, that's when cool stuff happens. Now, it could be disastrous stuff, you know, but it can also be very innovative. That's when they get creative, and that's when they do crazy stuff. We should have that too. We should have that disconnect time to explore. We should schedule it. And I mean that. Put on your stupid calendar time to just unplug. If you're like me, You don't have that. I mean, I struggle to do that. Time to play and discover. Time to just sit there and ponder, hey, what would it be like if we took these military drones and we took these little kids' Wi-Fi helicopters and we took some virtual reality stuff and it all hooked together through my iPhone? You know, what could we really do with that if I had a, you know, $700 product in the market that could offer me some of this combined stuff? What could I do? And you think about some of those things, and you think about some things that may be some opportunities. Okay, now with that, I'm going a little long here, so you may be thinking, well, yes, you are, you're rambling, but I'm going to just give you a couple of predictions here, and I'm not going to elaborate on them much, but there's going to be obviously, I mean, this is my view, so, and these are just a couple of things that I do, that our team has come up with. Medical issues related to social media and connectivity. You're going to have new types of healthcare issues because of what we have in terms of texting. You'll have new types of ADD come out because we're Twitter world happy. We're going to have new injuries, new healthcare problems from these things. I think depression is going to be on the rise because we have, while we are social media to death, we're disconnected from people to death. And I really think that's going to do. And obviously I'm going to throw in there the faith issue as you look at our culture, which is not really a technology or innovation. It's a destruction. But, you know, you're looking at our culture walking away from the belief in pretty much anything. Secondly, I think nanotechnologies, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but nanotechnologies are going to start to really capture a grip on things. And nanotechnologies are where we can change the atomic structure, you know, mess with the atomic structure stuff to change the properties of materials. What the heck does that mean? For instance, what if I could go to Lowe's or Home Depot and buy paint that was nanomaterial paint, where I could change the color, I could paint the wall and change the color electronically or by some means. Say, hey, you know, I have friends coming over and we're going to make this a bright red room. That sounds crazy, doesn't it? But I don't know if we're really that far away from that happening. We also might be able to paint a picture on the wall and have nanomaterials and we hook into it through our internet connection, whatever that looks like, and the paint become a television because we can electronically control the properties of the paint. Kind of cool, kind of crazy. People usually look at me crazy when I say that one, but I don't see why not. Being able to sense what others are doing, which is, you know, there's going to be lots of privacy issues when I got nanotechnologies and I can kind of drop them everywhere around my neighbors and have the ability to do stuff. Wow, there's going to be some really security, some really privacy issues coming out. We think we have privacy issues now. It's nothing. It's nothing. I see personal drones. I've kind of hit the drones. You know, why can't I have my own drone? Why can't I take one of these Wi-Fi helicopters, hook it to an iPhone? Of course, I'm looking at iPhones, and that's probably a technology of the past soon. But just as an example, why can't I have a drone flying around my house? Why do I need a cameras on my house that's mounted, that are physical, that are stopped? You know, for those of you who have security systems, why don't I have a drone that's a mobile camera that just flies around my property? Why not? It can be my security. I can have a drone fly in front of me. Why do I need to rely on GPS technologies for traffic stuff? Why can't I have a drone fly ahead of me and watch what's going on in the traffic I care about? I don't need all that data. I just need my data. And because I'm suspecting we're all going to end up with drones, I suspect we're going to have air issues. You know, that legislation is going to be related to drones and again, data and security and to things in the air. Related to that, I think you'll probably be able to have cars that fly. Obviously, there's people that do this now in the mission field in particular. But I don't think it's a big deal to make an automobile fly. Maybe not the kind of car we're used to. Maybe not that big, giant, heavyweight SUV. But why can't we have a car that we can kind of fly back and forth to work at low altitude, get us for, you know, forget the traffic. We end up with a different kind of traffic. I don't think we're really that far away from that either. especially as we look at some of these hybrid technologies, which are lighter in materials. 3D printing in the mainstream. Now, I don't know if you know what 3D printing means. We're used to printing on a piece of paper, but if I could print out a chair, if I could print out a table, if I could print out a pizza, why can't I do that? Could I not, instead of have printing ink, have food jets? You know, because if you look at pretty much, if you do any cooking, which I know because my wife does a lot of cooking, there's really a few basic ingredients to food. I can have salt and pepper cartridge. I can have a cheese cartridge. You know, I could have a food printer, which prints stuff. And because of that, I think people are going to end up selling, instead of people selling stuff like furniture, if I had 3D printers, why can't I sell the information, the design of the material that you can print on your 3D printer? So I'm selling you, instead of a $500 chair, I'm selling you a $29 print file that you print your own, and I go and buy the wood or whatever it goes in my my 3D printer, whatever materials, and I give you this high-quality chair, but I'm selling you information and data. Hey, and I like the idea of pizza on the download. Go to Papa John's. They have a new recipe. Print it. Hey. How great is that for delivery? You know, and you'd say, well, that's kind of crazy, but think about also when I'm mentioning these things, think about how do these things impact me and my career? What's the possibilities? But look, I could go on and on. I'm not going to go on. I'll throw some more on the show notes here. But I do want to close and close by just giving you reminding you. I'm always my job here is to help people. The why I do what I do is to help you to. I love being part of something other people are doing where they're taking control and they're taking responsibility. I am so sick of a society where we are so victimized. Not only does it put me and you that are trying to take responsibility, it gives us more responsibility, but it's also depressing to be around it. And people really want. You and I really want to take responsibility. We want to know that we are, in fact, empowered. I thank you for the time, and I do. If you have questions, if you want to talk through some stuff, if you have ideas, you know, send me questions. I didn't get to any email questions today, but send me questions via email, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Mention in the podcast, you know, that, you know, something that you want to know. If you want us to address it on the podcast or the radio show, let us know. And for the podcast, I thank you so much for going to iTunes and making your voice heard and rate us on iTunes. Feel free to connect with me. And I'm going to just ask the question again. What can you do and what can you make happen in the next week? In disruptive innovation, how can you become more aware and take responsibility in the next week? Forgive your enemies, then won't you find that one again?